So let's talk about music. My name is Sergio Ferrer, and I'm a composer and pianist of the classical persuasion. And I have today as my guest, composer Amy Gordon, whom I met a few years back in a ACDA conference, and who is gonna talk to us about music and about her music and about who we're gonna learn a little bit more. Now, hi, Amy. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Usually the first question I ask everybody is, how did you get to be a composer? I mean, how did you get here?
I've been asked this a few times over the pandemic. I've done a few talks, and so I've been revisiting my kind of my journey. So it's fun to kind of come back to this question because it's so different for everybody. But I
Yes.
do find that like everybody has like one piece or like one composer that they heard and they're like, wait, I want to do that. So for me, it was the Harry Potter score by John Williams. I was like, yeah, oh my gosh, this is like such a cool score. And that I had started writing songs when I was 10 and kind of was doing like the more pop kind of like, songwriting, lyric writing stuff. And I did that through high school. But then the Harry Potter soundtrack came out when I was like 16 or 17. And it really occurred to me, wait a second, I can actually compose instrumental music. Oh, I can film score. And then that kind of started my more serious like majoring in music, got my graduate degree in composition, and then kind of fell into my home, I would say, in choral music, where I combined the songwriting from my earlier days, which I still do as well, but also with kind of the classical style that I also tend to like. So I really find that's a nice blend and kind of a nice combination of my journey, I guess.
Yeah, I'm curious to know something. Are you doing any commercial work too, as you do your classical work, or you're mostly devoted to your classical work?
I will kind of do it if it comes to me. I'm not like actively, I guess, marketing myself or like going to film conferences or anything. But I have had some like referrals over the years, and those projects have tended to be really great because they're like a personal referral from a friend or something to a really good team. And I have done a few like YouTube themes. I'm in the process of kind of writing a podcast theme. And so I kind of stratify a couple worlds.
I see. But you are not steadily like working on shows or TV or anything.
No,
No.
no.
Okay.
And
All right.
to be quite honest, I have friends that do that and I hear their schedules and I don't know if I could have that kind of work. It's really intense. If there's a
Yeah.
movie coming out, they're working 60, 80-hour weeks. If they're lucky, sleeping at the studio when it's crunch time. I don't think I could do that. So I kind of like the concert world where it's a little bit more relaxed. It's like you get a year for a commission as opposed to like, oh, we have a 13-episode TV show that you need to score all of in a day,
Yeah,
So.
it's a different planet. Yeah, I've never really wanted to do the scoring part either. I because it's I don't know, it's something that I've never appealed to me. Some people like it a lot. I met the composer of this. His name was Ron, and he was the composer for what's this cartoon in Fox? What's the name?
Family Guy?
Right. He was one of the two composers for Family Guy.
Yes. Very
But
active actually in the Los Angeles scene. I think he has like a score study group.
he was
Yeah.
he left LA.
Yeah.
I went to some of his talks. I learned a lot from him, but the thing about this this guy is, when he was watching TV as a kid, he was thinking how we would score things. I mean, it was like in him, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's the way music should work. Like you, it's what's really coming from you, you know, that's what you should be doing, right?
Yeah. That's
my philosophy on it.
Yeah, kind of. Oh, yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Because it's not going to be as good. You're not going to be as good either if you're doing something that you really don't want to do. You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's always a mixture of projects in my life of like stuff that I'm just doing 100% for me. Uh-huh. Then there's projects maybe that, you know, I have to kind of, I really like the director and the choir, but there's like, you know, well, we don't have this soprano range this year. So can you keep it within this range? So I might really want to have like a desk camp, but I can't for this particular project. So there's usually some projects with like kind of outside things that are guiding it. And then I think all of us have done projects, you know, that is just for maybe like the connections or the paycheck or, you know, so it's, I usually have some sort of mixture of like what I call like pet projects, you know, that I'm just doing for myself. Like, and those kind of keep me fed in terms of like my artistic excitement, especially over the pandemic. I kind of was a little kind to myself in terms of like, if I didn't want to compose, I didn't. And when I did, I would compose, but I was trying not to force it. And so, yeah, I think there's kind of a spectrum. Like some projects you're like, that's not for me. I'm glad I did it, but I'm done with that.
All right. So let's see now some of your music. Let's share it with our audience. Which one would you like to start with? I have the Alleluia, the Hibernation, and the I'm Still Here.
Maybe let's start with Alleluia. It's a little happier before we get into, yeah, a little heavier.
All right. How do you describe your style of writing?
That's a hard question. I tend to like, I think, neo-romanticism, neoclassical, things that harken back to kind of common practice period. But if I want to use parallel fifths, I can. If I want to use... Right. More saturated harmony or not follow some of the rules, quote unquote. But I like composers like Prokofiev, Stravinsky, Bartok, but also, yeah.
Yeah, a lot. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh yeah. So also composers of the minimalism, like Steve.
Right. I was going to ask you if you considered yourself a minimalist.
I don't consider myself a minimalist, but I love
the minimalism.
Steve Reich's work.
Well, there is a minimalism element in your music, definitely.
Yes.
Let's hear some of it and then we'll talk more, okay?
Alleluia, alleluia, alleluia.
very nice. You know, there is an element I mean, from what I observe, you tend to do also by tonality in some things. You put two chords that are not from the same key or the same one overlapping the other in certain parts. Not in here a lot, but that's one of the things that you do, right?
Like polytonality.
Right.
Yeah, I think I also teach like bachelor level theory. And oh. I find whenever I'm on like the polytonal section, I tend to use that in my music. Whenever I'm on like the minimalism section, it makes its way. So I can kind of like, I remember I was really influenced by a Ralph Vaughan Williams piece in this, but I was also really interested in polymodality, like the middle section. It's like not entirely clear if it's in major or minor. I really like modal ambiguity.
I see. That's what you mean by polymodality, that major, between major and minor, that it...
Or like, is it an E flat major or E flat minor? E flat Dorian, like it might have like different modal inflections.
Right.
I definitely do that in a piece we'll listen to later in Times of Hibernation. This kind of like strange, you don't know if you're a major or minor. And I'm doing that on purpose to like...
Yeah.
Yeah, to kind of play with the listener a bit.
Good. Yeah. I find that interesting that suddenly, yeah, we are in an ambiguous place. Definitely. I can see that. And let's hear that hibernation.
Sure.
And
can I say a little bit?
Sure, please.
About this piece. So thank you again for, chatting about this. So in Times of Hibernation, this was actually written because of the pandemic in reaction to it. So this text will actually be part of a 5-movement song cycle for choir and string quartet. And I've actually finally written all 5 movements. So it's kind of following the arc of this very weird year that I'm sure everyone's had such a, it's been a pretty rough year. I hope that you've been okay and everything, but
yes,
I definitely, well, it was hard. Losing choir has been hit particularly hard because the breathing altogether, and it's how I want to deal with my anxiety and my, but I can't because it wasn't safe over the past year. And so I started actually writing my own text, which is something new for me. I've never actually written my own lyric, like text for my choir stuff, even though I have, years of writing songs. It was kind of like this other, like, oh, there's only poets can write text. And it just kind of like, I felt these words kind of coming out of me. So it's going to be a 5-movement song cycle called Songs of Hope in Strange Times.
I see.
Like, all kind of weird. So the first movement is in times of descent when things were just kind of, going crazy.
Right.
And stocking up on toilet paper, and just in the last March, it was so nuts. Then this movement is when things started to kind of get quiet and people like were scared of everyone. People were staying in their homes. So this is in times of hibernation when we're all kind of like hiding away from the world, and like time doesn't really mean anything, and it's like we're kind of waiting, but for what? Then the third movement will be in times of stasis when things aren't changing at all. It's just like, just, you know, nothing is really happening. No vaccines yet, nothing seems to be like moving. Then the fourth movement is in times of reemergence where things are starting to get a little better, people are poking their heads out and hoping a little bit. And then the fifth movement will be kind of a triumphant in times of rising, kind of as a mirror to the first movement. So this is the second movement where people are starting to like go into themselves and hibernate.
Cool. All right, let's hear it.
Of the world itself. ticking, the ticking of the clock. The ticking, ticking, ticking of the clock. The ticking, the ticking, the ticking, ticking, ticking of the clock. Stopped. The rustle of pages, silent. Is it here in this state of waiting? Is it here?
Very nice.
Thank you. Yeah. This piece was actually commissioned by Sacra Profana and recorded remotely. So it was actually a remote recording that was unedited together. So this was actually not performed live.
I see. Well, so how many people were participating in the recording?
There's one cellist and I want to say maybe 20 singers, 16 to 20.
And everybody recorded it remotely?
Yes. Yeah. So they're a professional choir. So they had like really good equipment. They all had at home setups, but yeah, it was all remote.
And who did the editing of the recording and everything?
I think it was Rumley Productions.
I see. You didn't do it.
No. No, I don't have, it's a lot of work to do this. Takes a really, really dedicated ear to mix these so cleanly. And they also did a video to go with it too, like a virtual choir, a little bit like a music video virtual choir.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a virtual choir on a composition, but it was just it was really a chamber choir. It was five people, but, yeah, I did the editing and the video and everything. And that's a lot of work.
It is, right? And then times that by, I mean, I have some people that like have 100 singers too, or like Eric Whitaker had a piece with like, what, 10,000 singers or something insane.
I don't know what kind of resources you have to do that. You have to have some resources because, and also the thing is, The less people have, the better they have to be.
Yes.
You know.
What was your piece that you remotely?
It was. It's called The Immigrants. It's a thing about. I did the text also but I did from interviews that I did with immigrants, 25 immigrants, and then from that I did four pieces. Why did I come here? The crossing, how do they cross the border, work, and then should I stay or should I go? And so I did the text for that, but it's a different text because it's text assembled from interviews. It's taken lines from here and there. But you did the text for this one, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
This was like the first piece I really wrote the text. And I'm writing the text for each of the movements. It was a very personal text. I mean, you know, I tried to make it poetic, but, you know, it was a hard, hard point.
But it communicates what I must say that it did put across what you wanted to put across. You know, I heard the thing about the hibernation and the ticking of the clock and how we're getting into this kind of time, different time continuum than what we had. And
the cello just kind of like, you know, it's just like in the score, it actually says just dryly like a metronome at
right.
You know, and then I kept, so that was the D open string, not to get too technical, but then the middle section went to the lower open string. And then finally, when it gets like the deepest, is it here in the state of waiting? It's all the way on the bottom string. Really wanted that just kind of like, it's not, it has like a strange quality, that low open string. It's kind of like a little ghostly, a little haunting.
I see.
Yeah. And so it kind of, the whole piece kind of sinks down.
Yeah. But it read, and that breathing effect came in nicely. There was just this exhale, right, in the score that you just had them exhale. And it fit very nicely.
And I have to give, I think Juan Carlos Acosta, the director, conductor of Sacra Profana, that was, I think, something he requested or suggested. And so when we were talking about the piece, so I really tried to incorporate that.
Yeah, and it worked. I think it worked. That exhale came in very, very, very nice. And and you know, the fact that you keep the tone of the cello going, and the next piece you also have something that repeats, and that's kind of a minimalist thing, you know.
You got me. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I was thinking. Yeah. Nothing wrong with anything. You know, there is so many styles of music, and each one mixes them up as one sees fit this day, which is nice, right? There's a lot more freedom than there used to be.
Absolutely. Also, I'm a big Arvo Pärt fan.
Oh, yeah?
Just his sense of space. Do you know Arvo Pärt?
Yes, of course.
Did you know he actually spent 7 years in complete silence?
I think I read that. Yeah.
know how to do that, but you can hear it in his music. He has a different sense of time. That's something I'm always like struggling with. Like how long is too long in the same idea? How much is too much silence, you know? And I just really admire his ability to just kind of stay in a world for so long. But I'm not sure I'm going to stay in silence for 7 years to get that.
No, that's a little bit too much for me too. Okay, and this song, I'm Still Here, I like it very much too. And it has this recurring thing, right?
Yes. So kind of an interesting background, if you don't mind, just a little
background. No, tell us.
So the words here are actually written by Jonathan Talberg, the choral director of Cal State Long Beach, where I actually got my master's degree.
I see.
He's actually a really good poet too. This is part of a concert me and a choir was in C3LA that I'm still in, but they're doing more virtual stuff now. One of our last live performances, it was a collaboration with two chefs who actually designed a food bite to go with the piece. And this, I was actually combined with a chef and we collaborated. He designed a little, bite to go with my piece. And I think it was takoyaki. I hope I'm getting the term right. It was like a Japanese dough ball. And so he actually made it for the audience right before the piece started, and they ate it during the piece. And then there was another piece about like fire, and the guy made like a really spicy donut thing, or like a really spicy.
Really?
Yeah, so everyone was like, eyes were watering, and we were singing this really intense song about fire. So it was a very interesting concert. So this piece also had some outside influences.
I didn't know about the chef. That's an interesting thing to put into your piece. Okay, let's hear the piece, and then we'll talk a little more, okay? Here it goes.
Oh, rise and drink sea and sky, oh, rise and drink sea and sky.
nice. I love that little the little jump, the third or the fourth that you put at the end of some of the lines. It's really nice.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I was thinking like a guitar or something. I forgot what I was thinking there, but yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, no, and it's the poem is about still being here. Like, can you tell us a little bit? I read the notes, but maybe you should tell us more. What was the poem about?
Sure. Well, this was written by Jonathan Talberg for his father who passed. And so he I don't think you'd mind me telling this. He has a view of the Long Beach, like all the ocean and the sky and the horizon. And he just, you know, he was looking out and really feeling his father who had just passed away, I think earlier that year. And so he wrote this poem just, you know, even though his father was physically gone, you know, looking at this beautiful horizon of the ocean and the land and the, you know, the horizon line, that his, you know, his father was still here. And the beauty of the earth kind of reminded him, you know, that death can't quell, you know, a person's memory or that connection.
Yeah.
That
he had. Yeah. It's I can relate to that. It's a moving text, and the setting is, you know, you did some there is some not improvisation, what's the name, that you let them singers kind of free for a little bit in there.
A little bit of limited aleatory.
Aleatory, kind of- right, that's the word I was looking for. And but it worked very nicely. It populates the choir. It suddenly, you see, it's not four people singing, it's 20 people singing. It's,
yeah.
You gave it a little bit more volume, volume in the sense of not being a small group, but suddenly the volume of the thing expands, and then it comes back everybody together, right?
Yeah. And that was kind of the idea, that like it was all these voices kind of, you know, maybe this person that I lost, I'm still here. And kind of one by one, like all the people that we've loved are still like around us, kind of creating this like halo. If that makes sense, like this wash of sound. The aleatory is just like, you know, washes of people that we've had in our lives still being with us.
Right. It was very nice. Okay, well, it's been nice talking with you, Amy. I was glad that I was able to see some of your music and hear some of your music like this. I don't know, is there anything that you'd like to say before we finish?
You know, just thank you so much for reaching out and letting composers talk about their work and really championing new music. And I know you're a composer yourself, so it's really awesome when you know other composers are so generous with their time to.
Well, we all have to do something, you know, for the genre in general. For we're competing against people that have, I don't know, tens of thousands of more times more resources than we do in promoting their music. And because in the end, we're competing against the pop music, and you know, it's time that people spend listening to this. And so we all have to help each other and push the group, this classical composer group, a little bit in the forefront, however we can, I think.
And that's what I really love about the choral world, especially, that it's really like, you know, everyone seems to be really excited and supportive of new music.
New music.
Yeah. And I think that's part of what drew me to the choral world, is like my home. I just really like that camaraderie rather than like competition necessarily. Like, we're really here to prop each other up. So.
Yeah. The person that got me into choral music was Stephen Polos. He told me, you know, that people are looking for new music in this field as opposed to competing with other people in other fields. So come over And that's the person who got me into choral music. So, and one of the things he did, he was one of the founders of the American Composers Forum. So he was also trying to get to help other composers.
Yeah, and I think that website all the time, like for opportunities, and yeah, it's a fantastic resource.
Yes, it is. Anyway, thank you so much for showing up for sharing your music with you, and I hope we can keep in touch.
Absolutely, thank you so much.